This is KLLG 97.9 FM, Willits, California. I'm Greg Schindel, train singer. We're now boarding the Bipolar Express. Chugga, 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 chugga up the hill. Puffin' and a chuggin', you know that engine will reach the summit and go down the other side. Whoopee! What a ride! Clickety-clackety-clickety-clackety-click. Look at the engine, that's old 45. She's fired up and ready. Oh, no, she is not. She's not half a lot. Anyway, whoopee! Here I am, I'm back. Have you been gone? Yeah, I'm gone, all right. Hey, I say whoopee again, what a ride, and welcome aboard the Bipolar Express for another spin around the sun. Whee! Oh, the light is returning, I can feel it. The seeds of the new year are stirring. Whoosh, whoosh, whoosh. Dreams and visions are appearing. Opportunities beyond our dreams. Oh, my goodness. They're materializing before our very eyes. And, oh, the days wax longer and the grass grows greener on the hills. And the blue sky down. Hey, what the hell? What's going on there, Greg? Jeez, he didn't care. I'm sorry. Sorry, train. I got a bit carried away. Premature infatuation. Hey, I hear there's snowing in the forecast. Oh, it's too late for those winter wonderland songs and let it snow, God, thank God they're gone, right? But I have to say, there is some cold weather sneaking up on us, and here's a real cold snap for you. I hope it doesn't get this cold. This is one of Lew Welch's poems called Frozen Pigeons. Yes. I was young in Chicago when the gargoyles of Cement University dripped beards of ice. They boarded up the fountains from the cold. It was new to me. 3 days of hoarfrost was the winter on my coast. All frozen and silent, students scurrying in World War II surplus jackets and boots. The whole world turned over, the poor and the married. Studying. A bad winter. Birds, even, dropped from those fake medieval eaves. Frozen pigeons. They were there, on the ground. The feathered people, the warm ones, dead. In that steady cold. Why, they boarded up the fountains from that cold. Woo! Sounds like Chicago or somewhere back east, right? Or
yeah.
Could even be New Hampshire, Vermont, maybe. Though it's pretty, actually, the ocean kind of doesn't let it get too cold in New England, right? You should know, right?
Near the coast, about 50 miles from the coast, is where the ocean influences.
And then it gets freezing.
Then it gets really cold.
Well, you know, Christmas, it comes on so slowly and insidiously. And then it's overwhelmingly, and then bang, it's gone. Decorations, they disappear. No, unless, you know, the tree is stripped of its ornaments, it's gone. And lucky, if you're lucky, if you don't have an artificial tree, why, you get to go out there and burn that thing and dance around it and light and sparks and all kinds of wonderful things that happen when you're dancing around a burning Christmas tree. Whee! What kind of song do you sing? Oh, burning tree, oh, burning tree. Oh, yes. But it does bring me back to another one of my favorite poems by Albert Sijo about trees. You know, dancing around those sparking, burning trees. Trees are so simple in their might. Suck up CO2, give off oxygen. Suck up water out of dirt, and put out new greeny leaves. Tree say, green tonight, too light. Tree take sun, make sugar. Tree no need feet to walk, likes where it's at. Stay put in wind and dance in one spot. Otherwise, tree ever patient in its habit. Tree no talk, so no tree wars. Sweet tree sex, not venereal. Tree stand, tree throw cool shade to ground. Tree reach up and down and sideways. Tree don't, tree brave, don't flinch when chainsaw put to it. Tree don't have red blood. Tree say, go ahead, kill me, see if I care. Anyway, tree got party going on all the time. The bugs and the birds, the lichen and the fungi, the mycorrhizae at the roots, and up the tree the squirrels and the possums and the grinning cats and raccoons and other assorted animals, even porcupines betimes. Light plays on leaves. Leaves shudder. Tree like rain. Wash off man dust, if rain not acid. Even dead, tree make fire. Ooh, that's what we're talking about here. Ooh. Uh-oh, look out. Shiny, shiny sun came down by the seashore. Waves shooting fire out. Sky shooting more. Velvet blades of green grass breaking through the air sheet, smoking in the water pool. Oh, body shining sun came. Feet staying cool, boy. Heads burning hot. Eyes can barely see, boy. Feeling. Hey, more. That 2-4 beat, that thumping bass, boom, 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 psychedelic lyrics, hyperventilation, woo-hoo-hoo. Works for me. It's one way to get there, isn't it? Yeah, settle down, Gregory. Okay, train, I will. You know, my New Year's resolution, one of them anyways, I'm hoping to continue the music of the Kindred Souls band. And predominantly it was a vehicle and is a vehicle of the joy of playing with a band and the enjoyment of playing original material where you could just step out and play music and showcase musicians' talents with solos, etc. You know, the Kindred Souls, they were formed in Marin in 1974, and there are still a few of us left still playing this music. And over the years, various musicians, lending their varied musical gifts, resulted in the Kindred Souls music to be labeled as Northern California Transcendental Folk Jazz. There you go, folks. Now, environmental activist Ponderosa Pine back then brought his chanting, and then Mac McCarty with his flute and his percussion ensemble and his saxophone sax and his soprano sax, of course, and the renowned jazz bassist Chuck Shear. That's of Chuck Shear Music, by the way, if you're wondering about that. He's still playing after 50 years. And of course, Doug Adams of Light Rain fame, he brought in his incredible fiddle guitar voice. And there's Clay Lilliston, still drumming at age 79. And my son Malachi, he was born, by the way, a Kindred Soul. And he slipped in with his incredible talents into the group. And his voice, his guitar, his flute, his panpipes, his didgeridoo, his youth, his good looks. I hate him. So many other musicians have been Kindred Souls. And once you are one, you're a Kindred Soul. Come and play with me anytime. And now looking ahead to a Kindred Souls concert. Hey, in late February, early March. Oh, my God, I wish. Chuck Shear, the original Kindred Souls bass player, will be part of that group as my son. And in my dreams, my daughter Heidi, she's born a Kindred Soul also, she might guest perform with us that evening. Other guests are expected. So look forward to this concert. I'll be talking about this, the Kindred Souls at, where is that? At St. Francis in the Redwoods Episcopal Church. It has an amazing acoustics, by the way. And then imagine listening to this music and taking off your shoes and dancing in the aisles. Oh, praise Jesus. Well, you don't have to say that, but you could come in and celebrate anyway with the Spirit. Now, the legacy of the Kindred Souls, it's being reborn. I can just feel it again for the very last time. And again, Kindred Souls. Oh, do you remember that theme? Kindred Souls. How large the family is. How great the love is. How it grows. How sweet, Greg. Thanks, Trey. Thank you. Hey, this is Greg and Trey on the BPE on KLLG LP 97.9 FM in Willits. Yes. And we're here imagining that golden opportunities await you this new year, bringing you good health and renewed wealth and renewed faith in the power of love and forgiveness. Okay, I got it out. But anyway, I was saying, looking back, 2019, I missed my opportunity to read W.W. Jacobs' The Monkey's Paw. So I'm going to put my instrument down. Don't put me down, Gregory. It's okay, I'll pick up later. Yes, now I picked up my book. Now, this is a classic of the old, scary old tunes, and this is quite old. Some of the language is archaic, but still, this is a classic. And while you're listening to it, be careful what you wish for. And that comes to mind. And the power of magic also is part of this. So wait a minute. I've got an idea. I'm going to set the tone for this. Pick up the instrument again. I told you I've always wanted to pick you up, Gregory. Okay, I'm going to set the tone with a little bit of Dark Shadows. Oh, you're scaring me, Gregory. You're scaring me. Dark shadows, blades of grass, hides the serpent. Oh, serpent. Dark shadows, deep blades of grass, hides the serpent and his child. You got to catch him in the open. Catch him in the open. Catch him in the open and be his friend. He remembers gentle fire from your hand. He remembers the gentle fire from your hand. Be his friend. You got to catch him in the open. In the open and be his friend. hides the sun. Dark shadow, blaze of brass, hides the serpent and his child. He remember the gentle fire from your hand. Oh, he remember the gentle fire from your hand. Be his friend, and you got to catch him in your hand. Catch him in the open. Catch him in the open and be his friend. You got to catch him in the open. Oh, open and be his friend. You got to catch him in the open. Catch him in the open. In the open and be his friend. The monkey's paw. Hey, do you dare to sit back and make a wish on the monkey's paw? Without, the night was cold and wet, but in the small parlor of Laburnum Villa, the blinds were drawn and the fire burned brightly. Father and son were at chess. The former, who possessed ideas about the game involving radical changes, putting his king into such sharp and unnecessary perils that it even provoked comment from the white-haired old lady sitting, knitting placidly by the fire. Ow! Hark at the wind, said Mr. White, who, having seen a fatal mistake after it was too late, was amiably desirous of preventing his son from seeing it. I'm listening, said the latter, grimly surveying the board as he stretched out his hand. Check. I should hardly think that he'd come tonight, said his father, with his hand poised over the board. Mate, replied the son. Ah, that's the worst of living so far out, bawled Mr. White, with sudden and unlooked-for violence. All of all the beastly, slushy, out-of-the-way places to live in. This is the worst. Pathway's a bog. The road's a torrent. I don't know what people are thinking about. I suppose because only two houses in the road are let, they think it doesn't matter. Well, never mind, dear, said his wife soothingly. Perhaps you'll win the next one. Mr. White looked up sharply, just in time to intercept a knowing glance between mother and son. The words died away on his lips, and he hid a guilty grin in his thin gray beard. There he is, said Herbert White, as the gate banged loudly and heavy footsteps came toward the door. Well, the old man rose and, with hospitable haste, and opening the door, was heard condoling with the new arrival. The new arrival also condoled with himself, so that Mrs. White said, "Tut, tut," and coughed gently as her husband entered the room, followed by a tall, burly man, beady of eyes and rubicund of vision. "Sergeant Major Morris," he said, introducing him. The sergeant major shook hands and, taking the proffered seat by the fire, watched contentedly while his host got out whiskey and tumblers and stood a small copper kettle on the fire. At the third glass, his eyes got brighter, and he began to talk, the little family circle regarding with eager interest this visitor from distant parts, as he squared his broad shoulders in the chair and spoke of wild scenes and doughty deeds, of wars and plagues and strange peoples. 21 years of it, said Mr. White, nodding at his wife and son. And when he went away, he was a slip of a youth in the warehouse, and now look at him.
Well, he don't look to have taken much harm, said Mrs. White politely.
Well, I'd like to go to India myself, said the old man, just to look around a bit, you know.
Better where you are, said the sergeant major, shaking his head. He put down the empty glass and he sighed softly, then shook it again. I should like to see these old temples and fakers and jugglers, said the old man. What was that you were started telling me the other day about a monkey's paw or something, Morris? Oh, no, nothing, said the soldier hastily. Leastwise, nothing worth hearing. Monkey's paw? Said Mrs. White curiously. Well, it's just a bit of what you might call magic, perhaps, said the sergeant major offhandedly. His three listeners leaned forward eagerly. The visitor absentmindedly put his empty glass to his lips and then set it down again. His host filled it for him. Well, to look at it, said the sergeant major, fumbling in his pocket, it's just an ordinary little paw dried to a mummy. He took something out of his pocket and proffered it. Mrs. White drew back with a grimace. Oh! But her son, taking it, examined it curiously. And what is there special about it? Inquired Mr. White as he took it from his son and, having examined it, placed it upon the table. Well, it had a spell put on it by an old faker, said the sergeant major, a very holy man. He wanted to show that fate rules people's lives, and that those who interfered with it did so to their sorrow. He put a spell on it so that three separate men could each have three wishes from it. His manner was so impressive that his hearers were curious that their light laughter jarred somewhat. Well, why don't you have three? Why don't you have three, sir? Said Herbert White cleverly. The soldier regarded him in the way that middle age is wont to regard presumptuous youth. I have, he said quietly, and his blotchy face blanched white. And did you really have the three wishes granted? Asked Mrs. White. I did, said the sergeant major, and his glass tapped against his strong teeth. And has anybody else wished? Persisted the old lady. The first man had his three wishes, yes, was the reply. I don't know what the first two were, but the third was for death. That's how I got the paw. His tones were grave, that a hush fell upon the group. If you've had three wishes, it's no good to you now, then, Morris, said the old man at last. What do you keep it for? Well, the soldier shook his head. Fancy, I suppose, he said slowly, but I did have some idea of selling it, but I don't think I will. It has caused enough mischief already. Besides, people won't buy. They think it's a fairy tale. Some of them, and those who do think anything of it, they want to try it first and pay me later. Now, if you could have another three wishes, said the old man, eyeing him keenly, would you have them? I don't know, said the other. I don't know. He took the paw and, dangling it between his forefinger and thumb, suddenly threw it on the fire. White, with a slight cry, stooped down and snatched it off. Better let it burn, said the soldier solemnly. Better let it burn. And if you don't want it, Morris, said the other, give it to me. Oh, I won't, said his friend doggedly. I threw it on the fire. And if you keep it, don't blame me for what happens. Pitch it on the fire again, like a sensible man. The other shook his head and examined his new possession closely. How do you do it? He inquired. Hold it up in your right hand and wish aloud, said the sergeant major, but I warn you of the consequences. Sounds like the Arabian Nights, said Mrs. White as she rose and began to set the supper. Don't you think you might wish for 4 pairs of hands for me?
Her husband drew the talisman from his pocket. And then all 3 burst into laughter at the sergeant major with a look of alarm on his face, caught him by the arm.
Okay, okay. If you must wish, he said gruffly, wish for something sensible.
Now Mr. White dropped it back in his pocket, and placing chairs, or motioned his chair, his friends to the table. And in the business of supper, the talisman was partly forgotten. And afterward, the 3 sat listening in an enthralled fashion to a second installment of the soldier's adventures in India. Now, if the tale about the monkey's paw is not more truthful than those he has been telling us, said Herbert, as the door closed behind their guest, just in time for him to catch the last train. We shan't make much of it.
Hey, did you give him anything for it, Father? Inquired Mrs. White, regarding her husband closely.
Oh, a trifle, he said, coloring slightly. He didn't want it, but I made him take it, and he pressed me again to throw it away.
Not likely, said Herbert, with pretended horror. Oh, why, we're going to be rich and famous and happy.
Wish to be an emperor, Father, to begin with. Then you can't be henpecked.
He darted around the table, pursued by the malign Mrs. White, armed with an anti-massacre.
Mr. White took the paw from his pocket and eyed it dubiously.
Gosh, I don't know what to wish for, and that's a fact, he said slowly. It seems, to me, I've got everything I want.
Well, if you only cleared the house, you'd be quite happy, wouldn't you? Said Herbert, with his hand on his shoulder. Well, wish for £200, and then that'll just do it.
His father, smiling shamefully at his own credulity, held up the talisman to his son, as his son, with a solemn face, somewhat marred by a wink as his mother sat down at the piano and struck a few impressive chords.
I wish for £200, said the old man distinctly.
A fine crash from the piano greeted the words, interrupted by a shuddering cry from the old man. His wife and son ran toward him. It moved, he cried, with a glance of disgust at the object as it lay on the floor. As I wished, it twisted in my hand like a snake.
Well, I don't see the money, said his son as he picked it up and placed it on the table. And I bet I never will.
Well, it must have been your fancy, Father, said his wife, regarding him anxiously. He shook his head. Never mind, though. There's no harm done. But it gave me a shock all the same. Oh, they sat down by the fire again while the 2 men finished their pipes. And outside, the wind was higher than ever. The old man stared, and he started nervously at the sound of a door banging upstairs. A silence, unusual and depressing, settled upon all 3, which lasted until the old couple rose to retire for the night.
Well, I expect you'll find the cash tied up in a big bag in the middle of your bed, said Herbert, as he bade them good night, and something horrible squatting on top of the wardrobe, watching you as you pocket your ill-gotten gain.
Well, he sat alone in the darkness, gazing at the dying fire and seeing faces in it. The last face was so horrible and so simian that he gazed at it in amazement. It got so vivid that with a little uneasy laugh, he felt on the table for a glass containing a little water to throw over it. His hand grasped the monkey's paw, and with a little shiver, he wiped his hand on his coat and went up to bed. And in the brightness of the wintry sun, next morning, as it streamed over the breakfast table, he laughed at his fears.
There was an air of prosaic wholesomeness about the room which it had lacked on the previous night. And the dirty, shriveled little paw was pitched on the sideboard with carelessness which betokened no great belief in its virtues. "I suppose all old soldiers are the same," said Mrs. White. "The idea of our listening to such nonsense. How could wishes be granted in these days? And if they could, how could £200 hurt you, Father?" "Might drop on his head from the sky," said the frivolous Herbert. Morris said that things happened so naturally, said his father, that you might, if you so wished, attribute it to coincidence. "Well, don't break into the money before I get back," said Herbert as he rose from the table. "I'm afraid it'll turn you into a mean, avaricious man, and we shall have to disown you." His mother laughed and followed him to the door and watched him down the road returning to the breakfast table as she did. And she was very happy at the expense of her husband's credulity. All of which did not prevent her from scurrying to the door at the postman's knock, or nor prevent her from referring somewhat shortly to retired sergeant majors of bibulous habits when she found that the post brought a tailor's bill. "Herbert will have some more of this funny remarks, I expect, when he comes home," she said, as they sat at dinner. "I dare say," said Mr. White, pouring himself out some beer. "But for all that, the thing moved in my hand. That I'll swear to."
"Oh, you thought it did," said the old woman scoldingly.
"I say it did," replied the other. "There was no thought about it. I had just..." "What's the matter?" His wife made no reply. She was watching the mysterious movement of a man outside, who, peering in an undecided fashion at the house, appeared to be trying to make up his mind to enter. In mental connection with the £200, she noticed that the stranger was well-dressed and wore a silk hat of glossy newness. 3 times he paused at the gate and then walked on again. But the 4th time he stood with his hand upon it and then with a sudden resolution flung it open and walked up the path. Mrs. White, at the same moment, placed her hands behind her, hurriedly unfastening the strings of her apron, put the useful article of apparel beneath the cushion of her chair. She brought the stranger, who seemed ill at ease, into the room. He gazed at her furtively and listened in a preoccupied fashion as the old lady apologized for the appearance of the room and her husband's coat, a garment which he usually reserved for the garden. Then she waited as patiently as her sex would permit for him to broach his business, but he was at first strangely silent. I was asked to call," he said at last, and stooped and picked up a piece of cotton from his trousers. I come from Ma and Megan's." "Oh," the old lady started. "Is there anything the matter?" she asked. Breathlessly, "has anything happened to Herbert? What is it? What is it?" Her husband interposed. There, mother," he said hastily. "Sit down. Don't jump to conclusions. You've not brought bad news, I'm sure, sir." And he eyed the other wistfully. I'm sorry," began the visitor. "Is he hurt?" demanded the mother wildly. "Is he hurt?" The visitor bowed in assent. "Badly hurt," he said quietly. "But he's not in any pain." Oh, thank God," said the old woman, clasping her hands. "Thank God for that. She broke off suddenly as the sinister meaning of the assurance dawned upon her, and she saw the awful confirmation of her fears in the other's perverted face. She caught her breath. And turning to her slower-witted husband, laid her trembling old hand upon his. There was a long silence. "He was caught in the machinery," said the visitor at length in his low voice. "Caught in the machinery,"
repeated Mr. White in a dazed fashion. Yes! Ah! He sat staring blankly out the window, and taking his wife's hand between his own, pressed it, as he had been wont to do in their old courting days nearly 40 years before. He was the only one left to us, he said, turning gently to the visitor. It is hard. The other coughed, and rising, walked slowly to the window. The firm wished me to convey their sincere sympathy with you, to your great loss, he said, without looking around. I beg that you will understand. I am only their servant and merely obeying orders. Well, there was no reply. The old woman's face was white, her eyes staring and her breath inaudible. On the husband's face was a look such as his friend, the sergeant, might have carried into his first action. I was to say that Ma and Megan's disclaim all responsibility, continued the other. They admit no liability at all, but in consideration of your son's service, they wish to present you with a certain sum as compensation. Mr. White dropped his wife's hand and, rising to his feet, gazed with a look of horror at his visitor. His dry lips shaped the words. How much? 200 pounds was the answer. Unconscious of his wife's shriek, the old man smiled faintly, put out his hands like a sightless man, and dropped a senseless heap on the floor. Oh. In a huge new cemetery, some 2 miles distance, the old people buried their dead and came back to a house steeped in shadow and silence. It was all over so quickly that at first they could hardly realize it and remained in a state of expectation, as though of something else to happen, something else which was to lighten this load, too heavy for old hearts to bear. But the days passed, and expectation gave place to resignation, the hopeless resignation of the old, sometimes miscalled apathy. Sometimes they hardly exchanged a word, for now they had nothing to talk about, and their days were long to weariness. It was about a week after that, the old man, waking suddenly in the night, stretched out his hand and found himself alone. The room was in darkness, and the sound of subdued weeping came from the window. He raised himself in bed and listened. Come back, he said tenderly. You will be cold. It's colder for my son, said the old woman, and wept afresh. Oh, oh, oh. The sound of her sobs died away on his ears. The bed was warm, and his eyes heavy with sleep. He dozed fitfully and then slept until suddenly a sudden wild cry from his wife awoke him with a start. Oh, the paw! The paw, she cried wildly. The monkey's paw! He started up in alarm. Where is it? What's the matter? She came stumbling across the room toward him. Oh, I want it, she said quietly. You've not destroyed it. Why, it's in the parlor on the bracket, he replied, marveling. Why? She cried and laughed together, and bending over, kissed his cheeks. Oh, I only just thought of it, she said hysterically. Why I didn't think of it before? Why didn't you think of it? Think of what, he questioned. The other 2 wishes, she replied rapidly. We've only had one. Was not that enough? He demanded fiercely. No, she cried triumphantly. No, we'll have one more. Oh, go down and get it quickly and wish our boy alive again. Oh! The man sat up in bed and flung the bedclothes from his quaking limbs. Good God, are you mad? He cried aghast. Get it, she panted.
Get it quickly and wish. Oh, my boy, my boy.
Her husband struck a match and lit the candle. Get back to bed, he said. Get back. You don't know what you're saying. We had the first wish granted, said the old woman, feverishly. Why not the second? Oh, a coincidence, stammered the old man. Go and get it and wish, cried the wife, quivering with excitement. Go and get it. The old man turned and regarded her, and his voice shook. Oh, he's been dead 10 days. And besides, I would not tell you else, but I could only recognize him by his clothing. If he was too horrible for you to see then, oh, my God, how now? Oh, bring him back, cried the old woman, and dragged him toward the door. Do you think I fear the child I have nursed? He went down in the darkness and felt his way to the parlor, and then in the mantelpiece. The talisman was in its place, and a horrible fear that the unspoken wish might bring his mutilated son before him, ere he could escape from the room. Oh, it seized upon him, and he caught his breath. And he found that he had lost the direction of the door. His brow cold and sweat, he felt his way around the table and groped along the wall until he found himself in the small passage with the unwholesome thing in his hand. Even his wife's face seemed changed as he entered the room. It was as white and expectant, and to his fears seemed to have an unnatural look upon it. He was afraid of her. Wish, she cried in a strong voice. Oh, it's foolish and wicked, he faltered. Wish, wish, he repeated, his wife. He raised his hand. Oh, I wish my son alive again. Ah! The talisman fell to the floor, and he regarded it fearfully. Then he sank trembling into a chair as the woman with burning eyes walked to the window and raised the blind. He sat until he was chilled and cold, glancing occasionally at the figure of the old woman peering through the window. The candle end, which had burned below the rim of the china candlestick, was throwing pulsating shadows on the ceiling and walls until, with a flicker larger than the rest, it expired. The old man, with an unspeakable sense of relief at the failure of the talisman, crept back to his bed, and in a minute or two afterward the old woman came silently and apathetically beside him. Neither spoke, but lay silently listening to the ticking of the clock. A stair creaked, and a squeaky mouse scurried through the wall. The darkness was oppressive, and after lying for some time, screwing up his courage, he took the box of matches and, striking one, went downstairs for a candle. And at the foot of the stairs, the match went out, and he paused to strike another, and at that same moment, a knock. So quiet and steadily as to be scarcely audible. It sounded on the front door. The matches fell from his hand and spilled in the passage. He stood motionless, his breath suspended, until the knock was repeated. He turned and fled swiftly back to his room and closed the door behind him. A third knock sounded through the house. What was that? Cried the old woman, sitting up. A rat, said the old man in shaking tones. A rat, it passed me on the stairs. His wife sat up in bed listening. A loud knock resounded through the house. It's Herbert, she cried. Oh, it's Herbert, she screamed. Oh, she ran to the door, but her husband was before her, and catching her by the arm, held her tightly. No, what are you going to do? He whispered hoarsely. It's my boy, it's Herbert, she cried, struggling mechanically. I forgot it was 2 miles away. What are you holding me for? Let's go, I must open the door. Oh, for God's sake. Don't let him in it. Oh, please, cried the old man, trembling. Oh, "You're afraid of your own son?" she cried, struggling. "Let me go! I'm coming, Herbert! I'm coming! I'm coming!" There was another knock. And another! Oh, the old woman, with a sudden wrench, broke free and ran from the room. Her husband followed to the landing and called after her appealingly as she hurried downstairs. He heard the chain rattle, and the bottom bolt drawn slowly and swiftly from the socket. Then the old woman's voice, strained and panting. "The bolt!" she cried loudly. "Come down! I can't reach it! I can't reach it! Herbert! Herbert!" But her husband was on his hands and knees, groping wildly on the floor in search of the paw. If he could only find it before the thing got inside. A perfect fuselage of knocks reverberated through the house, and he heard the scraping of a chair as his wife put it down in the passage against the door. He heard the creaking of the bolt as it came slowly back, and at the same moment he found the monkey's paw and frantically breathed his third and last wish. The knocking ceased suddenly, although the echoes of it were still in the house. He heard the chair drawn back and the door open. A cold wind rushed up the staircase, and with a loud wail of disappointment and misery, from his wife, gave him courage to run down to her side and then to the gate beyond. The street lamp flickered opposite, shone on a quiet and deserted road. Oh, the monkey's paw. Now, isn't that one scary story, Mike?
Yeah.
Whoa. So,
good one for Halloween.
Yeah, I meant to read it on Halloween, but I got spooked out of it. It scared me too much. By the way, this is, you are riding on the Bipolar Express on KLLGLP 97.9 FM right here in Wildlands. Hey, we've got a guest in our studio today. What is your name? Speak out now.
Sawyer Lovegood. I got a program, Remember the Revolution, Thursdays at 2.
Hey, wowee. Well, gee whiz, Mike, I guess we better behave ourselves here. He might talk.
That's right.
These witty people can't keep their mouths shut. I know what I'm talking about, don't you, Greg? Yes, you do, Train. Shut up. Okay, I'm all right. You sure? Yes, MRI. Oh, no, I don't want one of those. They might not find anything in there. Anyway. So, I am your me, Jay, today. Me, me, me. You know, it's all about me. Why have a show when it isn't about you? Me. So, I got to say, practice is a constant thing. I do it daily. I practice eating. I practice doing... No. I mean, my music, of course. In preparation for upcoming concerts, of course. Oh, that... Whoa, God, I did it all, didn't I? So, anyway, I just got the 7-minute warning, is it? Geez, that was a long story, wasn't it? Gee, filler. No, shh. I had to bring up some Halloween in order to get through this brand new show. But anyway, practice is a constant, and I'm practicing these particular songs that I'm going to play for you right now, a few of them anyway, and I'll bring them back next week because that's what you're going to get for the next couple of months. So if you don't want to listen, don't. But tune in to KLLG anyway. And you can check us out at KLLG. www.kllg.org. Okay, now. So let me just start with something a little silly. And I've been playing this silly song for years and years. It's all about those things that keep you waiting for the right time. Country girl, sunshine, keep you waiting the right time. Country mall, golden time, while there's diamonds and rubies on the grass, yeah.
Some of the girls are so sublime. Some of the girls, they just flash your mind. And one might love you fine in the country. Yeah. Country. Yeah. Country. Yeah. The country girl and sunshine can keep you waiting for the right time. Country morning time, while there's diamond rubies on the ground. Yeah. Some of the girls chase butterflies. Some of the girls got their head way up in the cloudy skies. They even paint their eyes. In the country. Country. Some of the girls wonder what to wear. They find it so hard to find someone who cares. Some of the girls are so sublime. In the flash of mine. Love is fine. Some of the girls chase butterflies. Oh, they even paint their eyes. And some of the girls wonder what to wear. Find it so hard to fail. Find someone who cares. In the country. Yeah. Country. In the country. Sunshine, keep you waiting for the right time. Whoa, country morning dew time, diamond rubies on the ground. Oh, country morning, hey, country morning, country morning, oh, country day, country morning, hey, country morning, country morning. Such a fine day, such a fine day, fine day. Such a fun, 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 such a fun. Much more when you're gone. You bring the sun on a rainy day. You bring the sun on a rainy day. Ah, you open the door once again just to see. Wake from a distance shaking the trees. Ah, the wind in your ears and the sun in your eyes. Gold on your finger. finds you listening again. All the old stories of how to begin. When morning finds you watching the blue in the sky, hard to believe, hard to believe, hard to believe there'll be no more, no more. Bring the sun on a rainy day, on a rainy day. You bring the sun on a rainy day. You bring the sun. You bring the sun, bring the sun, bring the sun, bring the sun, bring the sun. You bring the sun, bring the sun, bring the sun on a rainy day. On a cloudy day. Ooh, on a foggy day. How much more time do I have?
Not much.
Not much? Is it like a minute or so? Or?
Yeah.
Well, all right. You've been riding on the Bipolar Express. I said the Bipolar Express. On a KLLG LP 97.9 FM radio, radio. KLLG LP 97.9 FM Willis, California. Yeah. Hey, tune in next week. We'll be back. Have a nice day, a nice night, but have a nice.